It's interesting in the sense that it's what we expected. We did our first election report last November, and we kind of talked about what we saw from Iran in 2020, which was the surprise. Russia was expected, but Iran was a surprise, which they were doing a variety of things. Lots of hacking attempts, mostly, to try and break into different things. That could be everything from a campaign or a news site or going after a journalist, going after infrastructure around voting to get a set, not changing the votes, but creating perceptions around election integrity. And then they did a campaign where they spoofed that they were the Proud Boys and emailed voters trying to scare them about going to polling places. And it was interesting that they came in very late. They set up infrastructure like websites so that they could put out announcements, or if they had a successful hack and leak operation, they could dump information. That's exactly what we've seen over the last 90 days since our last report, is this seeding of the information space, as we would say, going out, developing some websites, trying to get some social media personas out there, so that if they have something they want to do as it gets closer to election day, they've got the presence out in the internet space to do that.
So you said as well, the second thing that you picked up on was they were trying to gain intelligence from political campaigns. How were they trying to do that?
They do it with a mix of cyber and also social media posting. So the ways that they go about doing that might be sending out spear phishing, in a large spray of accounts, trying to gain some sort of access at some point. And while we don't know that they've gained any access, we at least see them taking those techniques. The reason we're able to see that, by the way, is because over the last 4 years, going all the way back to election 2020, these same Iranian actors have been doing election influence and interference operations in other countries. Bahrain was one where we saw them do that in the past. In their actions vis-a-vis Israel, we've seen them do this. And another one was Albania in 2022, where they did a very aggressive, what we call cyber-enabled influence operation, hack and leak operation, hacking on infrastructure, using social media personas to announce that. They did a spree of that throughout 2022. So same actor sets, that's how we're able to see them trying to take these same maneuvers today.
Do you get the sense, based on the information that you've gathered and I guess the intelligence you've collected from these actors, that they have a good chance of being successful with what they're trying to do? Because the American public is kind of aware of this, because in part work you started more than a decade ago. I think some of this came about probably during your days at the FBI, but do you think they have a good chance of being successful with what you've seen? Because one of the things Iran has done over the years is a number of different activities where they've tried to either denigrate the U.S., they've tried to do assassination attempts, et cetera, but it's all been kind of ham-fisted. Is this more sophisticated than that?
It is still mostly ham-fisted, but what I would say is they're acute. This isn't the long-term sort of campaigns you see from Russia. They'll show up on a day, maybe when it's tense politically or publicly, socially. There are major events in the United States. They would immediately try and launch a hack or do some sort of a leak because there'd be confusion in the information space. They would try and seize on that. Would the technique be sophisticated? Probably not. But their ability to time and knowing that they want to do something puts them up on their toes a little bit more. So they can always get, something into the US information environment potentially because they know what they want to achieve, which is as much about chaos rather than trying to actually change the outcome of the election.
What then does Microsoft recommend for how do you recognize this, I guess is a better question, for the listener or viewer, how do you recognize this and how do you know that it's not real?
I think a couple things to think about on the cyber side, and this goes across everything from cybersecurity protections, which we do a lot for that at Microsoft. Things like two-factor authentication, updating passwords, making sure your infrastructure is covered. That's part of it. And then the biggest part of it is watch what you click. Spear phishing is the main way that all cyber actors still tend to get into people's accounts. On the influence side, in terms of the information that's put out there, I always try and push people on three things. What's the actual source of the information? So do they know who authored that piece of information? Is it a person, an organization, or is it just unknown content that's been distributed to you? Two, even if you know the individual or organization that published that content, where are they physically located? This is something what we've seen with disinformation actors. They might use a persona that seems very common, but then you challenge them about where they're really at, and they're not telling you exactly where they're located. We know this from the news business. You'll see chyrons, which will say, based in Boston, based in New York, in Washington, D.C. We do that for verification and validation. And the next part is building trust in terms of the media. So at Microsoft, we're very focused on content credentialing and trying to roll that out increasingly in an era of AI so that things are watermarked, essentially. You know that it's coming from a trusted source. You know what the source of it is, and it's got that metadata there to let you know that the content's real. Many of those solutions still being rolled out, but I think that's the future for digital media as well.